imagine that you're a Wisconsin dairy farmer and you get a notice. As of May 1, there will be no market for your product. These are cows that must be milked two or three times a day. That's what happened when Grassland Dairy Products notified, I think, about 75 farmers that as of May 1, there'd be no longer a market for their products. So I'm so glad that Agriculture Secretary Ben Bransel is here to talk about that. Ben, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Let's put this in proportion. Is Grassland a major buyer, one of the major buyers of Wisconsin milk, sir?
Yeah, well, we have significant industry here and a lot of processors, and they are one of the significant ones. They're not the largest, but they are a very significant buyer.
When I asked them, how much milk do you buy, I got a statement that I don't understand. So I'm really glad you can understand it.
Sure.
This is a Grassland statement. We sell ultra-filtered milk product to Canada, which is the equivalent of 1 million pounds of raw milk per day. Can you put that in context, sir?
Yeah. Every processor has a unique product that they make. Some of them make cheeses and they sell it locally. Some of them make cheeses and they sell it around the United States. Some make cheeses and they sell it throughout the world. This particular product is ultra-filtered milk, and it's a high-level protein product that's used in the production of other cheeses. And they are unique in the state of Wisconsin. There are a couple of plants in the state of New York that also produce this kind of product. So you produce it for a marketplace, and when the marketplace says, we're not taking it, that process is pretty much null and void.
So these 75 farms have been selling their milk to Grassland,
yeah.
And then Grassland enhances it to turn it into ultra-filtered, which is a term, quite frankly, I had never heard before.
Sure. Well, I hadn't either.
Really?
No. When this topic first came up in the early part of 2016, we're talking over a year ago, we were made aware of some of the policy changes Canada was making. And because Canada is where this product is sold into, we were told this could be a problem in the future.
In 2016?
2016.
Could
early,
be a problem.
Early. Could
okay.
be.
Could be.
Could be. We weren't able to really assess exactly how impactful it would be, but today we know that it's really hurting some farm families directly. We always talk about trade in dollars, trade in volumes, and we try to express how it impacts people and how valuable trade is. And in fact, the dairy industry, about one out of every 7 days is international trade. It's a very significant part of our world. But trade policies are supposed to allow transactions to take place.
And back and forth.
Back
across
and forth,
international borders.
Back and forth.
Excuse me.
And NAFTA, which has been around for quite a while, has been very valuable to ag trade with Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. But in this case, Canada, we believe, has violated the spirit of the NAFTA agreement through provincial activities and created this, if you will, barrier to our products going there. And if you go to 1 million pounds a day to zero, I would say there's a barrier.
Well,
I don't know how else to explain it.
President Trump has talked about NAFTA, and he talks about fairer international trade.
Right.
Is this a result of the Trump administration's new emphasis on fairer trade with our neighboring Canada and Mexico to the south, sir?
No, I don't think so. What it does is it highlights what the Trump was talking about. Because this happened in early 2016, they made the trade policy changes, they put in the new pricing structure in Canada that was going to have a direct impact, but it had not fully engaged yet. And so the Obama administration had been engaged on this topic. We had, the governor had, sent letters to trade rep Foreman. He was made well aware of it. Secretary Vilsack at the time was well aware of it and discussed with us secretaries, commissioners, and directors of the states what they were hoping to accomplish. And so what happened when they left and a new team comes in is really not part of the whole picture. It's a new group of individuals that have to be brought up to speed and made aware of what is it that we've been dealing with for a while? Let me explain trade policy. It's like walking through a doorway.
Okay.
And you go through the doorway back and forth, both parties. And then in this particular situation, Canada starts making changes. And we look at that, and all of a sudden there's a door being hinged on this door frame.
Is that door saying we have new standards for ultra-filtered milk?
We have new pricing structures for our products. You may be impacted. So here's a door.
One pricing structure from milk produced in Canada, one pricing structure from milk produced in Wisconsin?
Actually, it's one price structure in Canada, except for we're going to set up a new pricing structure to directly compete with the ultra-filtered milk product. So they now have a two-price structure.
Yep.
That's the easiest way I can explain it. There's more detail to it. So you have this door that's now hinged. It's very nerve-wracking to know that you have this free trade, but you have this door that's there. And it's harder to get through as the door comes a little more closed. It's a little harder to get through, but you continue to have trade, and you just have challenges, and you have to work with that. The end of March, Canada notifies Grassland Dairy that no more ultra-filtered milk, and the door slammed shut. And that's what started the whole ball rolling now, that the door's been there for quite a while, and now it's shut.
So now we have a date for the door to shut. But you paint a picture of international trade where trade goes both ways. Let me put on my Wisconsin champion hat. Is there anything that, what comes to Wisconsin from Canada? Let's start with that.
Many products. Let me give you one example.
Do we have the ability to retaliate? I mean, that sounds cruel, but.
We don't as a state, but the federal government does have
levers.
They have levers and options at their disposal. But let me give you an example. We have a processing plant here. It's a milling plant here in the state of Wisconsin. And it has employees. It has infrastructure. It provides products. And it develops income for that area and that community. Almost all of the raw material comes out of Canada. It's barley. And so for us to do something on barley directly impacts our own company. So you have to be very careful as to how you impose some retaliatory of programs so you don't really cause harm to yourself and your own communities rather than just putting pressure on Canada to make changes.
Okay. You're the Ag Secretary of the state that produces the second biggest volume of milk.
Yes.
I just want to be clear. Are you calling for the United States to retaliate in the wake of this different standard, in the wake of the, we're not going to buy any ultra-filtered milk?
We have not asked for retaliatory actions. What we have asked for is actions to address the issue with Canada, and we have not expressed how that is to be accomplished.
This is the letter you wrote with the Agriculture Secretary from the state of New York to the USDA, correct?
That letter was written for an effort for USDA to use programs at their disposal that could buy product off the shelf that put it into the Feed the Poor programs around the United States as well as around the world. The idea is if this milk is no longer being used in Canada for the purpose of ultra-filtered milk, maybe we could create other products with this milk. But because the marketplace is already established, we could use that product to feed some other individuals around the world that are looking for dairy nutritional ingredients.
Which is a process that doesn't happen overnight, correct?
No, it doesn't happen overnight. And we have what I call, we have two things going on here. One is short term for these families that
Yes.
need help immediately. And we have started reaching out to processors. We're going to meet with the Bankers Association. We're going to meet with other individuals we hope will give us ideas or can come up with solutions in the short term. And then we have this long term problem of what do you do with milk in the long term and how do you help the industry? Some of these solutions are going to have to be developed by the dairy community. Government can certainly help and support, but it should not be a government-driven solution.
Have you heard estimates if Grassland notified 75 farmers, have you heard estimates how much milk per day, per week those 75 produce?
Well, we think it's equivalent to about the amount of milk, and I'm sure it is very close to the amount of milk that was utilized to go to Canada. And I don't know that their milk was... So it wasn't Ben Branson's milk that was put into the product that was sold.
Right.
It was a blending of Steve and Ben's milk put together to create this. But in order for them to address how do you do this, they look at trucking routes, they look at areas of the state, they tell us that they looked at other areas that had other processors in the community that they might be able to find a home there. So it's a little bit complex, but they're trying to make it, I think, as straightforward as possible for the families that were impacted.
Do you expect other dairy farmers to get similar notices from other buyers of their milk, Ben?
I can't say no, but I'm very nervous in the present conditions of the dairy industry. We are aware of one other plant that had notified a small group of farmers, and we immediately went to work on that. We believe we found a home for all, if not most, of that milk in the state system. This is the next one, and it was much bigger, much more volume of milk that was impacted this time round with these 75, about 75 individuals, and that is more difficult than the original one was. But it put us on notice that the system is very full of milk right now.
Now let's talk about the impact on both some of these family farms, maybe third, fourth generations.
Yep.
And I'm also told that one farm with 3,700 cows got a notice.
3,200,
thank mm-hmm. you. So what are the real life options for those dairy farms on May 1?
Well, we either have to find a source for their milk to go into, or the lending community has to work with individual farms if they have any equity left in their farming operation, if they can survive not getting payments for milk for a short period of time.
Define short.
30 days.
30 days. What's the shelf life of milk?
On the farm?
Yeah.
72 hours.
72, excuse me, go ahead. So lay out some of those ifs.
So the farmer is going to have to dispose of the milk. Then we're in a very serious situation on whether we can find solutions beyond that. Some farms may not have that 30-day option. May 1 comes, they may close the door.
Close the door, sell their cows?
Dispose of their cows. They could keep their heifers and hopefully come back into milk production down the road in 6 months, 8 months. They will have to go through a very serious evaluation. Let me tell you, Ashley and I on our trip over were discussing some of the things that might happen on a farm. And we were saying how our life feels like one day is a year. Those people are living a year every day. So for instance, you're a dairy farm, you're two families, you're running your farming operation, you have to rent a little bit of land to create without purchasing the feed. You have to rent a little land to create feed for your dairy herd. Do you keep your rent? And if you do and you're going to plant alfalfa seed, you're not going to harvest this year, you're going to harvest next year. So you plan to be in production next year when today you're thinking May 1 may be the last day. There are a lot of heart-wrenching decisions that have to be made because there are investments that have been made. There's family, and I won't even call it a tradition, it's family efforts that have been put in. So there's some things that people don't even think about when you talk about the loss of a farm and what it is an impact. It's not just a job. It's not just walking away. It is, what do you do with the investments, the commitments, the contracts, and the relationships that you have from your farm with others that rely on you as well?
Is this a regional impact where most of the 75 farmers who got the notice, were they in north central Wisconsin or across the states?
It appears to be regional. In fact, I will share a map with you, Steve, that shows where the location of some of those farms are.
So the farms are the one with the dots?
Yes, and here's another similar type of map.
Okay.
So we are not told who the farmers are because it's confidential. So when the farmers call us,
yes,
and tell us, I'm impacted, then we can start working directly with them. Then we know who are we talking about. When we talk to processors, we can tell them there's this group of farms in this part of the state, in Columbus, Wisconsin. There's a couple of farms around there. In case they want to work in a geographic area, it's all in southeast Wisconsin, and we were informed that it was done that way because there is a trucking company down there that handles much of that milk. And so the theory was that we have this cluster of farms and they may find a better home rather than having them scattered throughout the state.
Well, but this didn't happen in a vacuum. And what I'm referring to is prices have dropped. Prices right now per hundredweight are what?
Oh, about $18 a hundredweight.
But I thought the last time I interviewed you, almost 2 years ago, weren't they up 21, 22?
Yeah, we were excited when we were in here and we were talking about milk prices from 21 to 24. $24 a 100 pounds were
24 to 18 in some cases.
Yes. So the community has already adjusted to a significant reduction in milk prices. And in fact, a year ago, it was even lower than that. So those prices have fluctuated over time, and farmers are used to dealing with that issue. This is the first time ever, where farmers have not found a home for their milk immediately. Historically, if somebody said, we're full up, we can't take your milk, they'd be on the phone 2 days later. Somebody, some other processor, some other company, and say, no problem, we got a place for you. This is the first time where we've had farmers, in this volume of farmers, been notified that we have to find another location. And if you will, the pipeline of milk is so full that it's tough to find a home.
Does it threaten the whole dairy industry in Wisconsin?
No, I don't think it's going to threaten the whole dairy industry, but it's going to cause us to do some deep thinking about what is the structure of the dairy industry in the future. And I don't mean the way some people would take it, but how will marketing plans be developed and how will farms be assured they have a home for their milk in the future?
Okay, Wisconsin, I asked to interview a Grassland executive. We have a statement from them. To do justice, to be fair, I just want to read it. It's five sentences. Our Canadian partners notified us that due to their new Canadian dairy regulations, they would stop purchasing our products effective immediately. The Canadian business affects Grassland up to 1 million pounds of milk per day. Despite our attempts to keep trade open, we have been unsuccessful and regretfully will no longer be able to take in milk from some producers. While this came suddenly, we hope farms will be able to transition during the next several weeks. This was a difficult decision and made with the utmost respect for the hardworking dairy farmers. Have you contacted anybody from Grassland just to walk through any other options here?
We've had discussions with Grassland, and they have come to the table freely with other processors as well. And yesterday when we had a conversation with the processing community and the milk handling community, they came to the table and were part of the discussions and part of the dialogue. I don't know what New York is going to do. They have two companies in a similar situation of Grassland that have just been notified that their products are no longer going to be accepted into Canada as well. And they have till the end of April to stop ship or won't be shipping products. So this is a case where it's not just unique to the state of Wisconsin, but it is the state of Wisconsin. That's what I'm responsible for. That's what I focus on. And I feel sorry for the others. I feel very disheartened for my own farmers here in this state and what they've put in and made of the state's dairy industry. So,
as you said, Grassland is a major buyer of milk.
Yes.
Does this decision threaten them as a company with employees in their region of the state?
Well, what I was told that, and I don't know their employee structure and their situation, they produce butter. I don't care where you go, you're going to see a Grassland packet of butter.
Okay.
Have you flown lately?
Yes.
There's a Grassland packet of butter on that food tray.
If they're still giving that food tray, yeah. Okay.
So they're involved in a lot of other product development. But I do know that the day the letters went out to the farmer, one of their employees was told, you no longer have a job. So there's another family that was directly impacted.
This is very personal for you. Your family has farmed in Marquette County for how many generations?
Six.
And you're now into beef, but beef. For decades you
dairy
were a dairy
farm.
Operation,
yep.
Right?
You know, it was a hard decision for us on whether to stay dairy farming or my other activities had taken me away. Was it best to make a change on the farming operation? For people who have their own decisions on transferring out of farming or moving on to another occupation or changing their farming structure, mm-hmm. You know, those are decisions that are thought of for quite a period of time. For this family,
yes,
there's 30 days period of time. That's what it is. I get my letter on April 1 and it says you don't have an option come May 1 unless you source out another location.
And I'm also struck the decision ripples through our economy because that family buys equipment and buys products from the local economy. So if they, it's a very real possibility that some of them will have to close, Ben?
Could be. Yep.
And then they're no longer buying from their local equipment manufacturer?
Yes. Well, to give you a really quick one, the gentleman that trucks all this milk.
Oh, yes. What about
their
company?
He's done.
Okay.
His trucks aren't needed. Maybe somebody else will use them. Maybe they'll go somewhere else. But he himself and these drivers are directly impacted. The individuals that are selling them feed. The veterinarian service that's in the area that takes care of the cow's health.
Right.
The nutritionist that designs the rations that, or the meals that the cows receive. He's not needed. So, yeah, we think we could, because some of the farms have 12 cows. Farm has 3,200 cows.
Right.
They're all in between.
Wide range.
So I think a conservative estimate is you could have as many as four families per farm directly impacted, and the indirect impact will be multiplied beyond that.
And we're down to 9,100 dairy farms in Wisconsin.
Approximately. Not quite that low, but we're very close.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Trump administration. They've been in office less than 100 days, and we read about the number of appointments that haven't yet been made. My question is, does the Trump administration get the urgency for these Wisconsin dairy farmers?
Yes, I think they do. The governor's office has been in direct contact with the White House and has provided the White House with information about what has transpired in the state of Wisconsin and what is going on in Canada. Commissioner Ball, Richard Ball, and I, Richard is in New York, in our letter to the USDA, we said we'll do the best we can. We send a letter, hopefully, trade rep who hasn't been confirmed by the Senate yet will get confirmation quickly, and that will be his first item that he would address. That's what Commissioner Ball and I are hoping. And that Secretary appointed Perdue will get confirmed so that he then can start making some of these decisions on USDA engagement on the topic as well. But it's kind of a very unfortunate timeline and time frame that we're in here. And it's not a, like I say, it's not a politics. It's not a It's not an administration issue. This is something that's happened for over a year or been around for over a year.
Yep. You talked about the federal potential response in your appeals with the New York Ag Secretary. Can anything be done at the state level? Are you meeting with Governor Walker and his aides on some type of an emergency plan? And how likely is it?
Well, we have been in conversation with the governor's office. We want to make sure that the plans, if there are good plans, they must be focused on the purpose. We have to think through how are these plans designed so they really accomplish what people believe is valuable. Yesterday, the governor and I met with the processors and talked to them, and we are looking forward to a follow-up conversation on what they're coming up with for suggestions, not for themselves, but for this situation. I will be meeting with the ag lending community in the near future. Today, we're meeting with the agricultural organizations that have dairy as part of their activities. We're going to meet with the producers that are impacted. I want to make sure that we don't just do a knee-jerk action that sounds good but doesn't accomplish anything. And I know that the governor wants to make sure that whatever we engage in helps the issue and in the long term does not exacerbate the issue.
Well, we have nationally an overproduction of milk. It's one reason that we've seen the price drop, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've had Michigan's gone up by 7% a year. South Dakota's gone up by 12% a year. We've had production increases in this state, but they've not been dramatic compared to many of the states in the U.S. And in some of those states, they have no processing capabilities to speak of. And so every time they produce a pound of milk, they go out into the marketplace and push it somewhere else. And that has a direct impact on us.
What's your advice to dairy farmers watching this show and the vendors, the members of their local retail and equipment community who are watching the show worried about that they'll no longer be able to sell to dairy farmers that may indeed be closed?
First off, I want the farmers to make sure that the market they presently sell to is going to be available to them in the future.
To call them and say, hey.
Make some assurances. I want to make sure that the lenders understand that when they tell a farmer that he has to make changes on his or her farm, that when she or he makes those changes, they're aware of what the market is telling them as well. Mm-hmm. It could be that a lender says you have to increase the cash flow to make your farm more viable in the future. So she sits down and she analyzes, how do I do that?
You can't just turn a switch for that.
I sell milk. I sell milk. So how do I do that? I add a cow. Well, adding a cow might help the lending side of the picture, but it hurts on the marketing side because if you have somebody else that's sitting on the other side saying, you can add the cow, but I'm not buying the milk. So there's going to have to be a lot more interaction between all the segments of the dairy community in the future than there ever has been in the past. And I think because this is the first time and because this is a situation that is so immediate, it brings to light to all of us that what worked in the past is not necessarily what the future will be.
And a good producer, cow can produce how much milk in a day?
Well, we have farms that are averaging 35,000 pounds of milk per cow.
Per cow.
Yeah, so we're using...
That's an annual figure.
Yeah, so, okay. Yes, so we're using numbers that others may not be able to perceive. So if you're at home and you're listening to this program, take 8.6, that's 1 gallon of milk,
yep,
and divide it into 35,000 or divide it into 1 million, and that will tell you what volume of milk we are dealing with, 1 million pounds a day, and you can take a look at that refrigerator and that gallon of milk and say, man, that's a lot of milk.
We're almost out of time, but I want to ask you to respond to this statement from the Director of Government Relations for the Dairy Farmers of Canada, as reported by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Yep.
This is not me. This is what they
right.
said.
Yep.
Representative, an executive, Dairy Farmers of Canada. You know what? It's not our responsibility. It's your own responsibility as a country to manage your production. We are a nation of 36 million people, again a reference to Canada. How do you expect us to consume your oversupply of milk when we already produce milk for our market? The response of Wisconsin's Ag Secretary?
When we have had free and open trade for many, many years, to take that door and slam it in our face, I don't know how I'm to react to it other than to say, even if we would work with you and be able to modify how we do things, Canada put us in this situation. They have pricing structures, that's their business. But when those pricing structures impact us directly and those farmers, then it should be part of their thinking, because if they're going to stay good faith neighbors in the international community, then you play nice. And slamming doors and faces is not one that is easily taken.
Given the immediacy, the May 1 deadline, next steps, Mr. Secretary?
Well, we're going to continue to explore every option possible. I'm hoping that the processing community and the milk handlers come up with some ideas that will help us temporarily in the interim. I really hope that when appointments are accepted in Washington, D.C., that the people take up that challenge immediately and address it. I have confidence that the White House is listening to Governor Walker and ready and willing to communicate with Canada their opinions on the topic. And we are going to do everything possible to help those farmers stay in the life that they have created over generations. And I want to make sure that they understand we're there to help them no matter what the outcome is, that we will help them in whatever decisions. We won't make the decisions, but we will help them in their thinking through some of the challenges they're facing.
Ben Branzel, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, thank you very much for coming in on this very urgent problem.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.